Welcome into the install week 7 edition. Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Buck Rising here with you for another week. Greg, there's a lot of fun football this weekend, but I don't think there was anything more intriguing than the local professional football team. So why don't we just keep it hyper local today, shall we?
Yeah, I kind of heard they won on Monday night. So we should probably talk about it.
it's funny to see how many people the day after a nationally televised game, how many more people are talking about Derrick Henry this week than were throughout the course of the season, other than the fact that he's getting a ridiculous amount of carries. That always cracks me up.
And here's the interesting thing. I think Derrick Henry now, an argument could easily be made that he is the most dominant individual player in the NFL, but I don't think he's the reason they won the game.
No, he's a big. It's rare that you can have a 3-touchdown performance, back-to-back 3-touchdown performances, and not be the sole reason that the Titans or the football team was able to pull it off.
I'm not suggesting he had nothing to do with it, sure. But I don't think it was purely Derrick Henry. But he is a pretty remarkable player, and like I said, I think I was discussing this with someone here at NFL Films, and where you tend to have your most important conversations, which of course I'm talking about the men's room, and I said I think Derrick Henry is the most dominant individual player in the game right now, and my guy said, yeah, I think that's a pretty fair statement.
Greg, it's honestly, and I started to have this realization last year, but you know, nobody's crowning him other than to call him King Henry just yet, but it legitimately feels like I'm covering a Hall of Famer, a future Hall of Famer, on a day-to-day basis. I've never seen anything like this in certainly my limited time covering the NFL. Right. It's apparently not since Jim Brown, so
yeah,
nobody else has either.
I've been probably covering it for a few minutes longer than you have, Buck.
Sure.
And watching tape, you know, for, you know, a couple of minutes longer than you, but I'm fascinated to see where his career goes. I'm enjoying it immensely as it's happening. And, you know, obviously you do tend to think about the future because in terms of the number of carries, that's the thing that's really interesting. Now, he's a unique athlete with a unique build. So we've never seen that before. So there's no way to answer that. There's no right or wrong here, and there's no way to answer it. Maybe he's the exception and he can do this for 5 more years. No one can answer that question. But as I think we mentioned last week, it's not up to the Titans right now to decide what he is in 5 years. It's up to the Titans right now to win football games and get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl.
And he's obviously a big part of how they intend to do it. So we'll get to Derrick Henry and the offense a little later, but let's start with Josh Allen and how the Titans game plan for him defensively, Greg. He played a pretty good game, but obviously they were able to cause some turnovers. What was their initial game plan that you observed on film against him? What kind of coverage looks were they showing him?
Oh, they were about as straightforward and defined and as basic as you could be. They had a 4-man rush pretty much every snap. Now, a couple of times they had what we call zone exchange pressures, which means that either Molden or Long would be the 4th rusher, and they would simply drop out a defensive lineman in underneath zone coverage. They did not have a 5-man rush all game except for one snap of cover 0. They played literally zone coverage on every snap. There might have been 3 or 4 snaps of man. They played zone coverage on every snap, and they tried to feature disguise and late movement to get to whether it was cover 3 or cover 2. The goal was clearly to limit explosive plays. When you play this way, you must prevent red zone touchdowns. And you could argue that those 2 red zone drives that led to field goals in the first half were really the key to the game.
Yeah.
The second one was on Josh Allen. He missed a wide open Sanders, which would have changed the game, to be honest with you, but he missed him. He didn't see him for whatever reason, or he saw him and didn't throw it. I only Josh Allen could answer that question. But Sanders was wide open on the Bills' 2nd red zone possession, and Allen off the play action boot left through to McKenzie in the flat for 3 yards. And then on the same red zone possession on 3rd and goal, from the 10-yard line, Allen had poor ball placement on the curl route to Diggs in front of Jenkins. And if he stuck it right between the numbers, that would have been a touchdown as well. So there were two red zone possessions on the first three possessions by the Bills that produced two field goals. And that was the game right there. And by the way, the Bills had been very, very good scoring touchdowns in the red zone. But I also thought that defensively, the Titans in the red zone did a really good job of matching receivers. Sometimes when you match receivers in the red zone, it's hard to tell whether the coverage call is man or zone, because obviously, even if it's zone in such a tight space, you have to match receivers, Buck. You can't just let them run free. So you have to match receivers. And I thought they did a real good job with that.
All right. It was an impressive performance. And really, it didn't seem like they had to evolve their game plan very much during the course of that game. As you mentioned, it felt like they were staying consistent with that plan. I talked to Bud Dupree after the game, and he said there was a particular focus on trying to limit him escaping to the right side, limit Josh Allen from escaping to the right side, because he likes to make a lot of plays off of schedule there. And I was more impressed, frankly, by the fact that they had so many different parts in the secondary throughout the course of that game and were still able to try and limit Josh Allen and those explosive plays with a great collection of skill players.
It was an interesting game, Buck, because I would say what they did exceptionally well was limit the explosives.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say they stopped them. So that's what made the game so interesting. I mean, look, this is not a team, the Bills, that is, that really runs the ball. They run the ball enough in their mind, and they would probably like more production out of their run game, but they're not going to, you know, run the ball. This was a close game, a game in which the Bills led at times, clearly, and they're not really a team that then's going to say, okay, we're going to hand the ball off. This team is built on putting the ball in the hands of Josh Allen. And Allen, he completed 35 balls. Yeah. You know, they didn't stop Josh Allen. I thought in the fourth quarter, there were, and in a game like that, there's always individual plays that stand out. Simmons had a sack in the fourth quarter that actually resulted from Allen's indecision in the pocket. The Bills ran a concept that I actually broke down in last week's matchup show. They ran the double curl post combination, and Allen was kind of waiting for Diggs on the post, and he likely had that throw, but it took just a beat too long, and Simmons made the sack. And then two plays after that, Allen actually had Sanders on the deep post over the top of Borders, and he was a beat late. So you could argue that if Allen makes either one of those throws, if he's able to make the one to Diggs, that could have been a big play. If he didn't wait that extra beat to Diggs on the versus Borders, that was Sanders versus Borders, then that might have been a touchdown as well. So, you know, in a game that's close, individual plays stand out. But I wouldn't say, and that's what made the game so fascinating, and a win is a win is a win. And as you said, 4-2 is way better than 3-3. But I'm not sure I'd say, well, after I watched the tape, that, man, they stopped them. I know what their approach was, and I know what they were trying to do. And you could say at times it was effective, but they didn't shut down the Bills' offense.
Which is, I mean, and that's what they needed to do. They're not going to be able to shut down players like Kyler Murray. They're not going to be able to shut down Patrick Mahomes, even though he looks a little bit off his game this season in particular. And we'll talk about the Chiefs.
And they're not going to shut down Josh Allen, who is the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL.
At the end of that game, Greg, when Josh Allen is sprinting to his left to try and reach out for the end zone, it's so funny to see him just flying through the air. There's a still shot that the Tennessean took, and Amani Hooker just desperately hanging on for dear life for the bottom of him. He is one of the most impressive players in the sport.
And just to show you the difference in games, okay? Yeah, and you know how coaches are. You know, coaches say things after a game like that. Well, we made enough plays to win, you know, that kind of thing. You know, those meaningless comments, you know, because even that play by Josh Allen, if that ball's marked 6 inches further, it's a first down. And all of a sudden they're first and goal. So I think the plan of not giving up explosives, that part of the plan worked perfectly.
Yeah.
And that was clearly the plan. They were not going to play man-to-man coverage, and they were not going to blitz. And they wanted to make sure they did not give up explosives, and they did not.
which it's a major accomplishment for a defense that has been giving up those explosive plays, not just through the air, but on the ground as well, as recently as last week. So let's look at the other side of the ball for the Titans offense versus the Bills defense. The margin for error, as you mentioned, Greg, so slim because Ryan Tannehill did not get off to a fast start. He only had 9 completions in the first 3 quarters, then rattled off 9 straight completions in the 4th quarter to help keep them in the game on top of what Derrick Henry was doing. We talked a lot about how different the Bills' defensive game plan was going to look against the Titans. A lot of single high safety, a lot of safety in the box, as opposed to what they did the week prior against the Kansas City Chiefs. How true to form did they stay on Monday night against the Titans?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you're trying to stop Derrick Henry. That's the game plan. It's pretty simple. I mean, you don't have to be a football X and O savant to know that they were not going to play out of a two-shell look. But what was fascinating to me, the Bills are a nickel defense. That's basically their base defense, Buck. They hardly play any snaps of what you'd call base defense, where they have 4 down linemen, 3 linebackers, and 4 defensive backs. They've played almost 90% of their defensive snaps out of nickel through 6 games.
That's crazy.
Which includes this game. And by the way, they did the same thing a year ago. They've only played 10 snaps all year with 3 linebackers on the field. So
that's such a wild percentage.
Yeah. So keep in mind that a lot of people might have thought going into the game that, well, you know what? They're not going to do that against Derrick Henry because you got to put big people on the field. But you know what? They did that. That's what they did. They kept their slot corner, Teron Johnson, on the field. And by the way, he's a very, very good player, and they just paid him a lot of money. But the Bills' initial game plan featured man coverage predominantly out of single high safety looks. Then they mixed in more zone, but it was predominantly out of single high safety looks, which we knew going in.
Yeah, this was something that, as you mentioned, everybody knew what and everybody knows what the game plan is against the Titans. You try and take away Derrick Henry. Their rushing defense was 3rd best in football coming into this game, Greg. Derrick Henry was about 7 yards short of doubling up their per game average allowed on the ground. Obviously, the 76-yard touchdown is what grabs people's attention, and it came out of 11 personnel, as you noted, from your notes from this particular game. I thought it was interesting that you brought up they ran the same concept on his first run of the 3rd quarter. It was the same play call.
It was the same play.
But it came out of a different personnel grouping. Yeah.
Yeah. And formation. And it only gained 2 or 3 yards. But, you know, what was really interesting to me in this game is the Titans, they went with a high percentage of 11 personnel, meaning 3 wide receivers. Because more often than not, you see them playing with 2 tight ends, at times 3 tight ends, which they did in this game. I'm just talking about the percentages.
Right.
And you often see them with a fullback. But 37 snaps out of 11 personnel, which was almost 3/4 of their offensive snaps. That's a high number for the Titans.
Yeah. Well, and it helps that they had – now, Julio Jones obviously was ruled out again at the end of that game with a hamstring injury, but it's the first time that they've had A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Derrick Henry, along with Marcus Johnson. Josh Reynolds was a healthy scratch for this game, but they had as close to a full complement of their skill position players as they have all season long. Greg, I want to talk about A.J. Brown because they ran that staple quick play action crossing pattern. It was clear as day if A.J. Brown – is 100% healthy, he probably makes a bigger play out of that one in particular. And it's not the only time that they ran it. But how big was having A.J. Brown and Julio Jones for the majority of this game for this offense, which is yet to find really its stride and kind of built up from this pick-your-poison type deal that they were talking about in the preseason?
Well, it didn't seem real big in the first half, Buck, and I'm just being honest. I mean, they couldn't throw the football.
Yeah.
And actually – Jones got hurt and went out, and he wasn't really a factor in the second half. But, you know, when I mentioned when we first started that as great as Derrick Henry is, and as I mentioned, I think he's the most dominant individual player in the game right now, I didn't really view him after watching the tape as the reason they won. I thought that what they did in the second half in the pass game with all those in-breakers to Brown and all those play-action in-breakers, which they do all the time. You know, I tend to call it bang play-action, where it's the fake handoff, and Tannehill either takes kind of a three-step drop or a quick five-step drop. It's bang, play action, bang meaning quick. And that's something they've done. You know, I'm sure people listening who are Titans fans can picture how many times they've done that since they've gotten A.J. Brown. He scored touchdowns on that, where he catches a ball at, you know, 10 yards or 12 yards and goes for a touchdown. He's done that four, five, six times in his career, some in the 60, 70 yard range. So that's a staple of what they do. It's a staple of what they've done for years, you know, since Brown's been here. And, you know, I never question coaches because I know what I do and I know how hard they work. But I guess I felt watching the tape thinking that, you know, that's a staple. I was somewhat surprised that the Bills didn't do a better job taking that away, but it's not easy to take away because of all the elements that are involved in the play that you have to react to defensively.
So what was the discernible difference? Just the fact that they were utilizing those concepts more in the second half as opposed to the first, because this was unlike any game that they've played this year. Ryan Tannehill didn't get sacked. He was getting pressured, but he was kept upright for the majority of that game. And it was surprised to see him struggle the way that he did in the first half.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised as well, a little bit, that look, the Bills, they're not a high percentage. Oh, I shouldn't say that. It depends on the opponent. They didn't blitz a lot in this game.
Yeah.
But they didn't really put a ton of pressure on Tannehill. But again, Tannehill didn't really throw a lot of balls until the second half. I mean, he only threw 12 balls in the first half. So, and I think he ended up with 29 in the game. And obviously the game in the second half turned into a game where you had to throw a little bit. I mean, you know, because as time gets away from you, even though they did not give up on Henry, and they never really give up on Henry, but as time kind of moves along, you do feel like you've got to throw the ball. And the Bills, when you're playing the Bills offense, which, as we said, the Titans didn't really stop in a strict sense, you feel like you got to keep put up points. You know, this is not the kind of offense when you get ahead, and they were ahead, what, by 1 point, I think, or whatever it was, 3 points maybe. I can't remember the exact scoring because it seemed like the lead changed hands so often.
Eight times throughout the course of that game.
Yeah, but I mean, you start to get into the late third, fourth quarter, and you start to feel like, wow, the possessions are getting shorter and shorter, and we have to score. And yes, you're going to give it to Henry, but you feel like, you know what, we need to throw the football a little bit. So obviously they had to throw it more in the late third into the fourth quarter.
It was good to see them do that, because that's been what's been missing from this Titans offense for the first couple weeks of the season. Greg, I want to touch on something before we turn and look ahead at the Chiefs upcoming this Sunday here in Nashville. The amount of times that they run Derrick Henry on first down, I don't know why it frustrates me the way that it does. I understand that you can't give up on Derrick Henry. I understand that you're going to stick to what it is that you do as an offense. But so few of them seem to be or to have any kind of efficiency. And I know that sounds wild to say, given that he averaged almost 7 yards a carry throughout the course of this game that was skewed by the one explosive. But I guess you can't answer the question what their logic is with this continual run Derrick Henry on first down, but is that necessary, how often they're doing it, for them to be able to set up their play action passing concepts?
Well, that's who they are. I mean, that's, you know, again, it's a philosophy.
Yeah.
You've got the best back in the game. 62% of his rushes have come on first down, and almost 70% of his rushing yards. So they have success running the ball with Henry on first down. That's who they are. You know, you always think in a given game, hey, do we maybe try to work off that and throw it more on first down? You thought maybe they could do that against the Bills. The problem is they didn't run a lot of plays in the first half. They couldn't. Look, Henry's long run, you know, the 76-yarder obviously changed the whole feel of the game.
Yeah.
You know, but and even though he's capable of that all the time, you're not going to get a 70-plus-yard touchdown every week, as we know. So that changed the feel. You know, if that was an 8-yard run, you would have said great first down play, but it wouldn't have changed the game.
Right.
But this is who they've been the last, really, not counting this season, going back like 2.5 years, when he sort of became the man, like halfway through the season in what, 2018?
That was 18, yeah.
Yeah,
David Flewellen was getting snaps over Derrick Henry against the New England Patriots, Greg. I remember that game very well.
Midway through 2018, they kind of said, okay, Derrick Henry's pretty good, and let's make him the guy. And then, obviously, in 2019 and 2020, he had over 300 rushes each season with 378 last year or so. And obviously, there's an extra game this year, but, you know, he's certainly on pace for whatever the number of rushes is, probably in the 470 range or something like that right now. So that's their philosophy. Offense is normally not the issue for them. I know some people, there'd be some games this year where they probably felt offense was the issue.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you don't really feel like this team struggles to score points. They scored over 30 a year ago per game. You know, they obviously scored 34 this week. And obviously one of them, some points came after an interception by Byard short in the field. But still, this is who they are. I don't think this is going to change dramatically, Buck, and it, you know, regardless of who the opponent is.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, keep it going. Derrick Henry, and that's what they're doing, 62%.
I mean, what they want to have happen, just and then we can move on.
Sure.
Is what they want to have happen is to be able to produce more explosive plays in the pass game off that. That's what's been missing this year. But right. The answer to that isn't to put Tannehill in the gun and toss it all over the yard. That's not the answer to it.
Yeah.
You know, so what the answer is to try to create through your run game the more explosive plays in the pass game, which they did well a year ago.
Just out of curiosity, Greg, what's the last NFL game you attended in person?
You mean a regular season game?
Regular season, postseason.
Because preseason, I didn't go this year because it was still, you know, I was still a little nervous about COVID. But
sure.
And the year before, obviously, there was no preseason. So it would be the preseason before that. I always go to the Eagles preseason games at home.
Okay. I just curious.
Because I go down on the field. I go in the press box. I see people that I see once or twice a year. So, you know, I don't go to, you know, take notes on the game. I go basically to renew acquaintances. But during the season, I never go to a game.
Show face, shake hands, kiss babies, the Greg Cosell way. I ask out of curiosity just because that was such a unique environment at Nissan Stadium. It's the most – I mean, it was a record capacity crowd, and I didn't know what the last game like that, like a regular season game or a postseason game that Greg Cosell's been at live and in person.
No, it's – yeah, I normally don't go to those to games.
Oh, well, if I had anything to say about it, Greg, you would get the full escort to make sure you got where you got to go. No parking concerns for Greg Cosell. Plenty of opportunities to get that, the institutional knowledge in the press box where it's needed. With this Chiefs team, Greg, I don't know what necessarily to make of Patrick Mahomes, because it's not like statistically he's playing poorly, but a lot of these throws that he's making that used to be, wow, only he can do that. He's taking a lot of those chances this year and it's not panning out in his favor. What is different about the Chiefs?
Yeah, and most people would probably say that, well, they're scoring a lot of points and he's throwing for a lot of yards, but that's not what a coach should be doing. A coach should be trying to get your quarterback, no matter who he is, to play to his highest level. What you're trying to get is your quarterback to play perfectly. And then as the old quote is, you strive for perfection and hope you grab excellence along the way. That's what coaching is.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, just because you put up points and win games, you don't say, okay, everything's fine, you know, let's forget about it. That's not what coaching is all about. One thing I thought was fascinating this past week, Mahomes had spoken publicly about the fact that his footwork was off, that his feet were a little too frenetic. I mean, they know this is not — the tape tells you, Buck, anybody who sits and watches tape knows this. This is not news.
Mm-hmm.
By looking at the tape and saying this, you're not saying Mahomes is not a good player.
Right.
That's not the point. You know, that's the way people take it, but that's not the point. So everybody knows this. So when your quarterback is doing those kinds of things, what becomes most important? Protection. You want to get him as secure and as comfortable in the pocket as possible so that he feels that he can play with calm footwork, with a calm helmet, that he can just overall calm down in the pocket. So what did they do more of this past week against Washington, who, by the way, still has a very good defensive line, even if their sack numbers aren't what they were in the past. They're still very good players.
Sure.
What did they do? They started the game out and they played with more two tight end sets, two tight end personnel packages than they had in any game this year. And they started with a philosophy of protection first. And that they're trying to get him comfortable again. And to some degree, it worked. There were other plays. You know, he's still, I think, a little overreactive to what he perceives as pressure. And I would say that he's still at times not particularly comfortable in a muddied pocket, you know, where there's people around him, and he moves. And then he'll make a couple of those Mahomes plays and everybody thinks everything is fine. He's capable of that all the time, as you know.
Yeah. Well, the protection, or rather the skittishness, for lack of a better term, what he's displaying this year, obviously their offensive line this season is drastically different. In fact, I don't think any of the guys that are starting for them on the offensive line right now started in that Super Bowl loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What has that done? What has that allowed them to do as far as the running game is concerned? We know that they won't have Clyde Edwards-Helaire when they come to Nashville on Sunday, but has that opened up an additional dimension for them that they lacked throughout the course of the postseason dealing with all those injuries?
Well, I'm not an offensive line guru, and, sure, and those who are might disagree with me. I think that the offensive line is much more of a run-blocking O-line than a pass-protecting O-line. I think at times they struggle versus, you know, pass protection. And this is an offense with a lot of deep drops. So it's not an offense built on, you know, get the ball out quick. Obviously, every team has those concepts, and the Chiefs do as well. But they do want to get the ball down the field. They've got speed. They want to get the ball down the field. And I think they had some issues in pass protection versus Washington's front four when they did not have help with formation, extra protectors, you know, or chips. So, you know, and that's the strength right now of the Titans defense, is their front, because we know in the secondary there are some concerns, and particularly with all the injuries now that they have.
With the Chiefs defense, Greg, and we'll wrap up on this note, obviously they're dealing with some loss of personnel. It feels like it's just the Honey Badger and Chris Jones out there trying to make plays.
Chris Jones was out again this week.
Yeah, it was. It's something for the Chiefs that they've been dealing with throughout the course of the season. They're giving up a league worse yards per play. They got right as far as scoring defense was concerned a little bit against Washington, who is now the league worst as far as points per game allowed. We know what the Titans are going to do. We know what the Titans' offensive game plan is week in and week out. Are the Chiefs capable of doing anything at this point to try and slow that down?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Chiefs will, you know, do what every team does as far as stopping the run. They'll get people in the box. They'll change up their fronts. They might do some run blitzing, you know, some run stunting. I mean, you try to do things that are based on your evaluation and your study of the opponent, which they do in far more detail than I can do, because, you know, they're facing one team. I'm trying to watch tape of, you know, almost every game, you know. So, but it's when it comes to the coverage part, the Chiefs continue to feature three predominant coverages: cover one, cover three, and they play cover two. They'll throw in some cover zero, you know, based on situations and field location. And no team in the NFL has played more snaps of zero than the Chiefs. And you will see it. You will see it for sure. Yeah. They're also a high percentage blitz defense, and you'll see that as well, depending on situation. But as far as stopping the run, you know, then you just got to buck up. You're going to get extra people in the box, and you're going to buck up. And that's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. It's what we just did for about half hour on just one, well, technically three football teams, but local, staying super local this week on the Insta.
I don't know if this means anything, but I just saw something on the place, I guess everybody goes for news these days, Twitter, Buck, you know, it's either Twitter or Entertainment Tonight. I can't decide which one gives me better news. You know?
Oh, I get it from TMZ, which makes me even a worse
person.
There you
go. Greg. just according to our good buddy, John McClain.
Yep.
I'm reading here. It says Texans Dolphins could have Deshaun Watson deal done this week.
That is significant. I'm seeing Aaron Wilson confirming that report as well.
Now, I don't know what that means for Deshaun Watson, and I'm certainly not one, nor would I ever even consider commenting on his situation. Oof. It's inappropriate. I'm not smart enough to know any of those details, and so I'm not even going there. You know, people have strong opinions on that one way or the other,
sure,
but I don't know what that means as far as the football part. In other words, he is not the one thing we do know is he is not suspended, correct?
No, he's not on the commissioner's exempt or not commissioner's exempt. Whatever list Adrian Peterson was right. put on, I forget the exact term.
Right. So technically, if that trade happened, he could play football this
weekend. God, that is a wild.
Yeah, and I'm not making a judgment one way or the other. I'm not, you know, that's not for me to do. That's not my, you know, my deal.
Greg, imagine 3 hours of sports talk radio. Every time we get close to this, I have to call a lawyer to make sure that I'm not stepping in something, however we discuss it. No, I'm completely sympathetic to that.
The point is, what we do know is he's not suspended.
And we know that the Dolphins could use a whole hell of a lot of help, but I think it's more than just the quarterback position at this point. Well, that seems like a pretty impactful way to end the podcast. Greg, what's coming up on the NFL matchup show this weekend for the people outside of are you guys doing Titans-Chiefs this weekend?
That's going to be our full segment game, Buck. Our full segment game.
Spicy.
So that is the big game in our show this week because, you know, the Chiefs are still the Chiefs. I mean, they've been in the last two Super Bowls, so they're still the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And the Titans are coming off a huge win. And by the way, it's not like the Titans have been a bad team the last 2 years. I know fans in a particular city, when a team loses a game or they think they're not playing well, all of a sudden they forget that they've been pretty good. But the Chiefs, you know, the Titans have been a pretty good team the last couple of years.
Nobody harbors more self-loathing, I swear to God, Greg, than Titans fans. They kill me. They kill me.
Well, you've got to be in some other cities, Buck. I'm going to leave that alone, too.
Yeah, we don't want to get people beating down Greg's door in Philadelphia or the Northeast area. Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Make sure you DVR the matchup show. Of course, Greg is on 3HL on 104.5 The Zone every Thursday as well. Always a pleasure, buddy. We appreciate you taking some time and enjoy the football this weekend.
Appreciate it, Buck. Really enjoyed it. Thanks.